Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 601, titled, You Gotta Be Kidding, subtitled 911 Update. This program is being recorded on June 24th of 2007. The title alludes to just a mind-wrenching range of information that continues to come to light in conjunction with not so much September 11th, although that too, but really the political forces and the economic forces that precipitated that event. But looking at things to a certain extent, at least through the lens of September 11th, we're going to be taking a look at some things which in sane times perhaps would have led someone who discussed things like this to be taken to be mad. But that is this kind of we are in such a time. So we're going to plunge right in, and something about which I haven't been kidding at all is the milieu of the Bank Al-Taqwa. That is not only the financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood, but has historical links going back to the Third Reich. Its head, Yosef Nader, was an Abwehr, parenthetically, German military intelligence in World War II intelligence service, or basically he was an agent of the Abwehr. And beyond that, the Bank Al-Taqwa offers something of a vista onto a number of elements of fascism running down through the ages. Yosef Nader was close to the Grand Mufti. According to an Asia Times article, he actually helped the Grand Mufti escape from Germany at the end of World War II. François Junot, a very important figure, heir to the collected literary works and political last will and testimony of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels, was very, very close to the Bank Al-Taqwa, and in particular people like Ahmed Huber. We're going to talk about Italian fascism and one of the many interesting sort of Janus-faced relationships within the Bank Al-Taqwa milieu. But right now we're going to take a look at Ahmed Huber and what he had to say about September 11th. Now, Ahmed Huber was born Friedrich Armand Huber. He is a Swiss national. He gravitated from sort of the left all the way over to becoming an outright fascist, and from there became an Islamo-fascist, although still retaining a fascist outlook. He converted to Islam and became something of an embodiment of the tradition of the Muslim Waffen SS and Wehrmacht formations that fought in Europe during World War II. There is a recent book specifically published in 2006 called The Enemy of My Enemy, subtitled The Alarming Convergence of Militant Islam and the Extreme Right. It's authored by a Virginia professor, George Michael, published in hardcover by the Kansas University Press. And in it, the book's title is self-explanatory. It deals with the relationship between the far right and the Islamists, and that's the focal point of the book. But in this book, there is a quote from Ahmed Huber, who is interviewed at considerable length in the book. Ahmed Huber, I guess we should perhaps mention for the benefit of newer listeners, Ahmed Huber, after becoming a Muslim, became a protege of a fellow named Johann von Leers. He eventually, that is to say, Johann von Leers, also became a Muslim. He changed his name to Omar Amin von Leers. As Johann von Leers, he was in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Joseph Goebbels' propaganda ministry of Nazi Germany. He then, as Omar Amin von Leers, was in charge of the, Institute for the Research of Zionism, unquote, for the Nasser regime in Egypt. Ahmed Huber was very, very close to the aforementioned François Junot, again, heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Hitler, Goebbels, and Bormann. And it is that same Ahmed Huber who is speaking here. Now, the last important point, a pivotal point here about Ahmed Huber, is that that figure with that interesting heritage going, Huber was very close to the Grand Mufti, but close to Janu, close to von Leers, and really connecting the Third Reich past with what I call the Underground Reich present, because Ahmed Huber has been serving as a liaison person between the Islamist community and the European and American far-right and neo-Nazi community. So it is in that capacity as something of a bridge between European and American neo-fascists that Ahmed Huber is operating here. Now, Ahmed Huber specifically has been quite close to the NPD, Germany, that is the top German so-called neo-Nazi party, and the NDP, excuse me, and that is very, very close as well to the National Alliance in the United States. It is, again, Ahmed Huber as a liaison person between American and European neo-fascists and Islamists it's in that context that he's functioning here. Also, before I get into this, remember that there are a number of broadcasts that detail and a number of descriptions that detail these connections. I mentioned in passing in particular, for the record, 456, a compendium on Nazi and fascist connections to September 11th, and note some of the very, very interesting, quote, neo-unquote Nazi connections to September 11th and related events. I will have a link in the description for this broadcast to that description. Now, turning again to The Enemy of My Enemy by George Michael, Ahmed Huber, describing September 11th, said, "I have my own idea about 11 September. Among Muslims, it's a very controversial debate. Many Muslims still believe that the 11th of September was organized by the CIA and the Mossad to bring closer together the relationship between Israel and the United States and to help make war in the Middle East and to put under Western Jewish control the most important geopolitical zone on earth, which is the Middle East. I believe that 11 September, but I have no proof, was organized by American patriots, Muslims and non-Muslims together with the help of foreign Muslims residing in the United States. From 1988 to 1998, I was in America every year at Islamic conferences. I made big lecture tours through the United States, and I always met three groups of people at these conferences. There were American right-wing people, not American Nazis or Ku Klux Klan, not these kind of people, but people who were rather close to the extreme right of the Republican Party or other independent right-wing groups. Then the second group was Muslims, young American Muslim patriots who came from Muslim countries. And the third group was the Nation of Islam people. And these three groups always told me two things. They said, we must free America from Jewish Zionist rule, unquote. And two, then we must change the foreign policy of the United States toward the national interests of the American people. We must end this Jewish Zionist rule over America, unquote. And when I asked them, how will you do it? They said, well, we have friends in very high places, and there will be a big bang. It will happen here to wake up the American people, you know, like Pearl Harbor, unquote. Then Huber goes on, Pearl Harbor was organized by Roosevelt and his Jewish advisors to provoke Japan to attack America. Then Hitler would immediately declare war on America. It was not Japan. They really wanted America to go to war against Germany. Then the way was open to make war against Germany. And this is what these people told me. Something similar will happen here. They said, you will hear a big bang, unquote. And then came the 11th of September, and my Egyptian wife said, you see, the Mossad and the CIA, unquote. And I believed it also. But then I got telephone calls from American friends, and they said, see, now they have done it, unquote. I said, what? And then they said to me, they have done it. And then the coin was dropped. I said, This is counterproductive. This 11 September will provoke a huge alliance of American and Israeli Zionism against Islam, against the Muslim world, unquote. And they told me, yes, it will be at the beginning, but then America will get into difficult days, and after some time, the American people will wake up. When it is up to the nose in these difficult days, political, economic, war, and so on, they will ask, who is responsible for this? And they will say, it's the Jews and the Zionists, unquote. One told me that around the beginning of September 2001, a telephone call, a very good friend of mine told me, you know, Ahmed, then we will have 1933, unquote. Referring, of course, to Hitler's ascension to power here. Continuing, Huber says, and then, of course, I knew. He said that the American people will wake up, as did the German people wake in 1933. For me, I still didn't believe it. Now, the more and more things go on, I see how Bush and all his experts, I mean, Mr. Wolfowitz, Mr. Pearl, Mr. Kissinger, Mr. Feingold, I say maybe there is something to what my friends in America told me. It is possible now that things will go in that direction. You know, in the 1990s when I was in America, we were talking about how to change Jewish rule in America. For me, a Swiss, it was fascinating. One of these young persons said, you know, we may have many sympathizers in the American army, and if necessary, the American army will make a coup d'etat against the Zionist American regime in Washington, unquote. Well, that is remarkably close to what I've been driving at great, great length and in great, great detail, and perhaps a tip of the hat in passing there to the extraordinary both length and detail of my own investigations into September 11th, to the many interests that are associated and with getting these broadcasts out, from Al at Spitfire to my engineer to the various stations, WFMU in particular, to KFJC, which allows me to record in the studio here, so all of to all of you who've endured this massive global warming from all the hot air that I've been spewing forth, but more importantly that I've been recording in my own crude way in the Spitfire website, but a tip of the hat to those of you who have endured. But all of that massive body of information has been directed at basically trying to tell people this is what I think is happening. I think the Underground Reich is behind this. I think it involves powerful elements within the Bush administration, powerful elements within the so-called neo-Nazi milieu, both European and American, and Islamist elements aligned with them, and that the roots of many of these relationships go back to the original World War II period. It would be impossible past a point to really go into detail about all of the key features of what I've been talking about. In the description on the Spitfire website, I'm going to talk more, I will write more, I should say, about just exactly where people can go to learn more about the world view, so to speak, the Weltanschauung expressed there by Ahmed Huber, because that's basically what I've been saying about September 11th. Recall that there was an account in the Bank al-Taqwa that was maintained by a guy named Ali bin Musalim for al-Qaeda, and the al-Taqwa milieu was alleged to have been involved with Ahmed Huber, with al-Qaeda even after September 11th. But when it came out that people in the U.S. were investigating Mr. bin Musalim, he was found dead in his apartment a month after that became public. And it turns out that Ali bin Musalim, the apparent supervisor of the al-Qaeda account at Bank al-Taqwa, had in the early 1980s and late 70s conspired with the Hunt family, along with a number of other families, the very, very powerful right-wing Hunt oil family of Texas, specifically Nelson Bunker Hunt, a longtime activist on behalf of far-right causes, perhaps most recently to the memory of some a supporter of the Contra effort that came to light during the Iran-Contra scandal. Now, another of the interesting vistas that Bank al-Taqwa and its milieu have onto the far right concerns Italian fascism. As discussed in a number of different programs, including turn to the descriptions for the Record 456 and also number 535, there's a good discussion of the very, very interesting relationships between Italian neo-fascism and also the Islamist milieu of Bank al-Taqwa. A fellow named Pier Felici Barchi is the attorney for Youssef Nadi. He's also the attorney who handles the Swiss investments of former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, himself a former member of the P2 Lodge. There are a number of interesting links between the Bank al-Taqwa and the Italian far right, the Alleanza Nazionale, the overtly fascist and terrorist organization Ordine Nuovo. One of the most interesting aspects of that whole Italian far-right connection is that it was also this very same milieu, the old milieu of the P2 Lodge, the Supersize Me, that is at the very epicenter of the apparently crucial propagation of the Niger uranium yellow cake disinformation that was used as a primary point of justification for the U.S. entry into Iraq and to a debacle of unprecedented scale. I'm going to reiterate by way of perhaps again prodding people to think about, or perhaps for the more ambitious research, some of the interesting links between the al-Taqwa milieu and the Italian far right, and even beyond that, the links between the al-Taqwa milieu and the international what Kevin Coogan called the fascist international, the post-war fascist international, a meeting. This, by the way, is from an article that Kevin wrote called Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and al-Taqwa. It was published in 2002 by Kevin Coogan. And the article talks about a meeting that was held in April of 2002 at the Mont Pelerin resort in Switzerland. Now, at that resort, a very exclusive resort, there was a gathering at which among the attendees were Gianfranco Fini, the head of the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian fascist party that was a coalition partner of the Berlusconi government. Gianfranco Fini, again the head of the Italian fascist party, was the Italian prime minister, our deputy prime minister, and Italian foreign minister. He was present at this meeting. Also present was Jean-Marie Le Pen, the head of the French Front National, the leading French fascist, and although he certainly would be the last to acknowledge such an assignation, I think it's a fair one. Also present was Franz Schoenhuber, who certainly would not shun the label of fascist. He is a former SS officer and the head of the Republican Party in Germany, or the Republikaner Party in Germany. And also present at this meeting was an unnamed American far-right leader. This meeting, interestingly enough, again in April of 2002, brings together people like Ahmed Huber, Gianfranco Fini, Jean-Marie Le Pen, and some of these other people, and Franz Schoenhuber, and it's sort of a manifestation of the post-war fascist international. And I wonder about the apparently significant role of the Supersize Me milieu, the old P2 clandestine Italian intelligence / fascist milieu, about which we've spoken so many times over about a quarter of a century plus. It is that milieu that generated the Niger yellow cake disinfo, not generated, but passed it on. It was the primary vehicle for the propagation of that disinformation, and look where that has gotten us. That has gotten us to a situation not at all unlike exactly what Ahmed Huber's friends were predicting and what he recognized. From, again, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and al-Taqwa by Kevin Coogan, perhaps the most recent remarkable story concerning Huber comes from a brief item in the Swiss tabloid Blick that in an April 26, 2002 article by Alexander Sauté that Huber was involved in a meeting of far-right leaders from Europe. A photo showing Huber with Jean-Marie Le Pen accompanies the article. The Blick story, available on the web is as follows. Mon Pèlerin, VD. Christian Cambuzat, the promoter Scharfmacher of the right extremist Jean-Marie Le Pen. The guru assembles together some of the top leaders of the European right. On the idyllic Mont Pèlerin, they debate their crude ideas. At his secret visit to a spa in Switzerland, Le Pen hardly remained alone. Rightist leaders from all over Europe traveled to meet the extremist presidential candidate who was hosted by Cambuzat. Franz Schoenhuber, founder of the Republican Party in Germany and a former member of the SS. He talked with Le Pen, who constitutes together with Schoenhuber the Front National faction in the European Parliament. Gianfranco Fini, Italian post-fascist Mussolini admirer and founder of the Alleanza Nazionale. He also was at the meeting with Le Pen and Schoenhuber. What he doesn't mention here, you see, butting in, is that Gianfranco Fini is also the foreign minister of Italy and the deputy prime minister of Italy. So, I mean, is it just... This is very, very significant indeed. Continuing again, jumping back in, speaking of Gianfranco Fini. Gianfranco Fini, Italian post-fascist, Mussolini admirer, and founder of the Alleanza Nazionale, and, says Dave, Italian foreign minister and deputy prime minister, he was also at the meeting with Le Pen and Schoenhuber. Ahmed Huber. The Swiss is on the Bush administration's blacklist. I met Le Pen at Mont Pèlerin as he went to Christian Cambuzat's spa, Huber told Bleak yesterday. At the extremist rendezvous, an American far-right politician was also supposed to have taken part. Note, the American is not further identified, Kevin Coogan. Christian Cambuzat said that Le Pen, after the election, had again become the sharpest weapon of the Front National because Le Pen changed his image from a venomous old man to a, quote, kindly U.S. TV evangelist, unquote. Proudly, Cambuzat brags, with me, Le Pen can relax well from his political endeavors and openly link up with new contacts. Although the Bleak story does not give details, Cambuzat runs a spa for the very rich, the Démonique de Revitalisation, inside a hotel on the famous Mont Pèlerin. That's an editorial note from Kevin Coogan. That again from a report on Islamists, the far right, and Bank al-Taqwa, copyright by Kevin Coogan, 2002. Other developments on the September 11th front, so to speak. And again, I wonder, is that meeting, does that have something to do with Iraq? Were they talking about how to further pump up the importance of the Nadja Yellowcake story in order to precipitate the war, in order to bring about what Huber's far-right American contacts with friends in high places, unquote, were said to be bringing about. Who knows? Now, speaking of friends in high places, the following is an article. I'll give the URL. This story has been on a lot of websites. This is from June 20th of 2007. It's titled here, Bin Laden May Have Arranged Family's U.S. Exit from FBI Docs. Osama bin Laden may have chartered a plane that carried his family members and Saudi nationals out of the United States after the September 11, 2001 attacks, said FBI documents released Wednesday. The papers obtained through the Freedom of Information Act were made public by Judicial Watch, a Washington-based group that investigates government corruption. One FBI document referred to a Ryanair 727 airplane that departed Los Angeles International Airport on September 19, 2001, and was said to have carried Saudi nationals out of the United States. The plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royal family or Osama bin Laden, unquote, according to the document, which was among 224 pages posted online. The flight made stops in Orlando, Florida, Washington, D.C., and Boston, Massachusetts, and eventually left its passengers in Paris the following day. In all, the documents detail six flights between September 14th and September 24th that evacuated Saudi nationals and bin Laden family members, Judicial Watch said in a statement. Incredibly, not a single Saudi national nor any of the bin Laden family members possessed any information of investigative value, unquote, Judicial Watch said, obviously being sarcastic, as we've seen in a number of broadcasts. In fact, a number of those members of the bin Laden family were indeed implicated in terrorist-related activities, specifically involved with one or another Islamist and or Al-Qaeda operation. One more story very, very quickly. There are perhaps to a certain extent at least some shifting winds in Washington, D.C. This is a story that hit the wire, so to speak, on Friday, June 22nd. This is a Reuters story headlined, House Votes to Ban Aid to Saudi Arabia. It's by Richard Cowan of Reuters. It reads in part, the U.S. House of Representatives voted on Friday to prohibit any aid to Saudi Arabia as lawmakers accuse the close ally of religious intolerance and bankrolling terrorist organizations. The prohibition, reflecting persistent tensions with the kingdom after the September 11th attacks on the United States in 2001, was attached to a foreign aid funding bill for the next year that has not yet been debated by the Senate. It also faces a veto threat from the White House because of an unrelated provision. A spokesman for the Saudi embassy in Washington declined to comment on the legislation. In the past 3 years, Congress has passed bills to stop the relatively small amount of U.S. aid to Saudi Arabia, only to see the Bush administration circumvent the prohibitions. Now, lawmakers are trying to close loopholes so that no more U.S. aid can be sent to the world's leading petroleum exporter. By cutting off aid and closing the loophole, we send a clear message to the Saudi Arabian government that they must be a true ally in advancing peace in the Middle East, unquote, said Representative Anthony Weiner, a New York Democrat. According to supporters of the legislation, the United States provided $2.5 million to Riyadh in 2005 and 2006. The money has been used to train Saudis in counterterrorism and border security, and to pay for Saudi military officers to attend U.S. military school. Quote, Saudi Arabia propagates terrorism. We all know that 15 of the 19 9/11 hijackers were Saudi, unquote, said Representative Shelley Berkeley, a Nevada Democrat. She added that Saudi youth had entered Iraq to wage jihad against U.S. forces fighting there. Osama bin Laden, the Saudi-born leader of the Al-Qaeda group that carried out the September 11th attacks, was expelled from the kingdom in 1991 for anti-government activities. he was apparently able to get his own folks out, perhaps. So he certainly got out, courtesy of somebody. It appears, according to the initial FBI speculation, either the Saudi government or Osama bin Laden himself, or perhaps it should have been, and possibly Osama bin Laden himself. We've talked about a lot of things. We're going to talk about a lot more things. But in order to gain a hands-on understanding of the long, long, long-running investigation on these airwaves into not only September 11th, but in particular the huge historical forces and political forces around it, go to the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. There's a wealth of information there. Audio files in particular, download files for the For the Record series, lectures, archive shows, links to WFMU's website with the whole For the Record series available, program descriptions, each virtually an article in and of themselves, an entire mini library of old anti-fascist books, just a huge, huge amount of information. It's got a search function to help you find stuff. It's also got a page for you to click on and support the work that I'm doing. If you don't like what you're hearing, well, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. That, however, concludes this side of the work. This wraps up side one of For the Record program number 601. You got to be kidding, subtitled September 11th Update. This has been recorded on June 24th of 2007. My name is Dave Emery. You got to be kidding.